Let's step into hour number three and see what we can serve up for you, wherever you are. And we are looking at what many are beginning to say now is the second wave, or just an extension of the Henry wave, the first one. We'll see. We'll see. Florida bars and restaurants are beginning to close just a week after reopening. We call that for you here. Coronavirus can still pass between face mask wearers even when they're 4 feet apart. It's a new study. Dexamethasone. Dexamethasone. S-O-N-E. Hailed as a major breakthrough in treating coronavirus. You can read it. CDC says it doesn't know when it will be safe to resume cruises. Those big ships, which still are at sea with 40,000 crew altogether still on cruise ships. Well, some are docked, but they're still on the ships. I guess they're waiting to test them, and then they let them go. All right, another highly touted hydroxychloroquine study turns out to be a bad joke. Here's a good one for you. Then we'll get started here. Henry already has this, I'm sure, in his notes. A lawsuit filed by attorneys in Oklahoma seeks to prevent President Donald Trump's campaign from causing a super spreader event by holding a rally in Tulsa this coming Saturday without proper safety precautions. This is a June 16th story. Venue management company ASM Global is named as a defendant in the lawsuit. The filing asks the court to require health measures like face masks if the event goes forward. Plaintiffs seek limited relief based on Oklahoma's public nuisance laws. Plaintiffs merely seek a court order requiring ASM Global to institute appropriate social distancing protocols for the June 20th event. Fat chance, including the mandatory use of face masks and social distancing rules for all guests and employees, da 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 da. All right, well, this will be interesting to see. We've got a few more days for it. This is Wednesday tomorrow already. All right, Henry, step aboard. How are you?
Well, there's been a lot of activity on the rally road, if you will. And
yeah.
As well as a couple scientific studies. There are
what?
A couple
science?
Updates.
Science? Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, take a break. Yeah, right. Go to something a little different. Anyway, on the Tulsa side, the judge has already denied the injunction, so there will be no injunction to prevent them from holding the rally unless they come up with some type of safety measures. So that's over. And on a similar note,
I just got this story about two eyes. Today's date, too. Interesting. Good. Thank you for that.
Yeah,
we're up to date.
This afternoon, yeah. The judge denied it. So
good.
It couldn't have been that long ago. He just announced where it was going to be. But anyway, that was denied. And then along those lines, the Montgomery, Alabama, has its ICUs full, and cases are now starting to die. So the doctors from the hospitals went to the city council to testify for making masks wearing mandatory, and the city council voted 4-4, which is effectively killed the bill. So still don't need the mask, even though they're out of ICU beds, and the deaths are starting to pile up there. But they're just gonna, you know, the the doctors were being asked, well, is this really a pandemic? And I mean, Trump, I mean, the historians will take a look at this, and they'll end up labeling him as a mass murderer because, I mean, he is just wreaking havoc with this pandemic by politicizing it and by refusing to wear a mask. And by
Well, in all fairness, we can't.
You don't either.
Yeah. In all fairness, he's not the only one. Governor Cuomo of New York.
He's the president.
Yeah, well, I know. But there are a lot of other people in positions of power.
Cuomo wears a mask. He doesn't when he's
Well, he sent all those patients to the extended care facilities, and they were hot cases. So, not good. All right, anyway, let's get on with this.
Yeah.
So, Trump's rally is on schedule for this Saturday in Tulsa. I assume you have your ticket already purchased. And
well, hold it.
Uh-oh.
The facility only holds 19,000.
Well, we thought it was 10. It's 19. That's interesting.
Right. 19,000. But according to Trump's campaign manager, or whatever he is, Pascal, he said they got 1 million requests for tickets.
Yes.
Right. So they not only are expecting to fill the 20,000 seats in the stadium, the facility, Bank of Oklahoma Center, but since they've got so many requests, they're expecting an additional 60,000 coming, and they're going to put them into the adjacent convention center. so they're going to have 80,000 people there without.
So they're
going to
put him in the other center on their big screen, obviously.
Right. That's close enough. It's safer for him. He only gets exposed to 20,000 instead of 80,000.
All right.
The citizens of Tulsa get to get exposed to all 80,000 after they've been at the rally, so they'll be loaded up with virus, and it's just, you know, ridiculous. I mean, he's setting this up. Yeah, you know, he can do his read from the teleprompter and send out videos. You know, he's going to have these in-person rallies, which are just for him. And he's going to expose 80,000 people at the rally and then expose the entire population of Tulsa at the airport or on the roads or at the restaurants or wherever these 80,000 people go. And, this is the first of many. And like I said, there's a incubation period. So he can have this and say, oh, it went off great. We had 80,000 people there. We couldn't fit them into one. We had to put the overflow at the adjacent one. And I'm going on the road and going to Florida, going to North Carolina, going to Texas, and going to Arizona. And he's going to go bang, bang, bang on that. And all four of those places have dramatic increases in cases. And in fact, three of the four set records today. They had the most cases ever recorded for that location today. I mean, Texas had, well, they had 4,000 on their website, but apparently only 2,600 of them were new cases. The rest were from the prisons that they just entered. So anyway, 2,600 were new, and that's an all-time high for a single day. Florida had 2,783 actually today, which was a record for them. And Arizona had 23,092 today, and that was a record for them. So three out of the four locations had all-time highs today. And by the time he goes next week, these all-time highs will be history. I mean, they're gonna be, you know, in the neighborhood of 3,000 or 4,000 cases a day per state by the time he goes there. And you know, they're all gonna go. I'm sure he's gonna continue them indoor, and at best they'll hand out masks, but none of his. You know, Fifth Avenue crowd. If you can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, that you know, they don't need to wear masks. You know, he's not wearing a mask, so they can do whatever they want. He can do whatever he wants. That's the way it works. So, I mean, that's why he's going to go down as a mass murderer. He's got all these followers that are going to go ahead and, you know, like Pied Piper here, you know, marching off the cliff and go into these venues and infect each other, and then go out and infect whatever city or state they're from, and he's just going to spread it. He's going into a hot zone. These places are all having more cases.
You know,
than
you're really talking about a truly history-making event here.
Right, right. This is Philadelphia, 1918. I mean, they decided they were going to have a parade. And thousands died within days, actually, in 1918. And it was very dramatic. They overwhelmed the hospitals, and, you know, the people died. And it was real clear that it was from the parade. And they wanted to have the parade. World War One was over, so they're going to celebrate and kill a bunch of people. Trump doesn't even have he doesn't even have anything to celebrate. He's just going to kill people because he needs company. I mean, it is so absurd. And, you know, people are just a little bit too close to it. They just have to take a couple steps back. He's literally going to have tens of thousands of people in an enclosed arena without masks, screaming and yelling. During a pandemic that is peaking. these are going to be spikes. I mean, this is all the first wave. This isn't the second wave yet. I mean, whatever you hear on TV or whatever wacko things that Pence publishes, oh, no second wave, or whoever, Mnuchin or what's his name? I can't think of it, but Kudlow says.
Oh, Kudlow. There, oh, my.
Yeah, he said there's no second wave. Pence said there's no second wave. Nobody said there's a second wave. This is summertime. The second wave comes in the fall. Anybody that's ever, any scientist has said anything about a second wave, talked about the fall. They even said the second wave in the fall. And these guys are writing pieces for the Wall Street Journal are going on cable news and screaming and yelling, there is no second wave. And nobody said there was, except them, to say that there wasn't. You know, they just lie constantly. They're saying that these increases, these spikes, where they're running out of beds, the hospitalizations are spiking at the same time, are due to testing. Because they're doing more testing, which is false.
Trump's going to sign an executive order banning testing, you know.
Yeah, he says, we're going to get the confirmed cases down to zero.
We're going to get this thing down one way or the other.
Right.
Damn it, I'm going to ban these stupid tests.
Right, right, right. They just get in the way. Right. They give you data. What's data? Data. It needs propaganda. Data is just to be used, and bad data is to
be. We're really, dear friends, all of you listening, we're on the precipice of a remarkably interesting historical event, I think. When you think four events, let's just be a little liberal, 40,000 per event. If you get some of these, let's say 30,000. All right, that's 120,000 people. In four events, who are literally going to leave those events as potential spreaders. And 120,000 more cases.
And some are followers, so they'll go to they'll go to
groupies.
Trump and get infected.
Corona groupies.
And then they'll go to Arizona to infect everybody else. I mean, they're going to kind of. I mean, it is kind of like the Pied Piper. They're just kind of marching in line, or I mean, actually, it's really much more like Jonestown. But
Trumptown. What's going to be interesting is to watch how Trump's narcissism responds to the rally. We've seen it many times before. After that morbid West Point performance.
With no applause. Yeah. He needs to get his adrenaline rush and go be in front of these adoring fans, and then, you know, maybe they'll send them cards from their hospital bed and say, well, you know, things didn't go that well at the rally. I was having a good time, but, you know, 4 days later, I was kind of coughing a little bit. But anyway, it will be historic. That's what I'm saying. It's not even there's anything to celebrate. I mean, Philadelphia at least had the end of World War One. Trump's got. I need a fix. Yeah. I need a fix. Let's do another rally. We're going to do four of them in 10 days. You know, something like that. I guess he figures
that'll hold him over, at least 3-4 weeks.
No. These are just the ones they announced. He's not going to stop at four. He is not going to stop until somebody has a successful injunction and say that this is a health risk and that you're being irresponsible by allowing this to happen. But he's basically going to red states, so the governors will go along with him. And the locals don't seem to have enough pull to get this done. I mean, Tulsa has an increase in cases. It's not as dramatic as these other ones, but Montgomery was a good idea. Good example where people are dying now, and it's not like they're saying you can't leave your house. They're saying you need to wear a mask, and they're saying no, that's too much. You know, that doesn't look good. So it's just totally absurd. It's all based on pure propaganda that he's spewing out. He's saying he doesn't need the mask. He's got, you know, supporters saying the pandemic isn't real. There aren't really that many people dying. And I mean, it's ridiculous. And I mean, this is the, Dad's going to talk about with one of the papers. This is the Italian strain. The Italian strain is what's causing all these problems in the South and in the Southwest. And, as an aside, it's also what's causing all the problems in Brazil and Russia. And that's why the U.S. is number one, Brazil's number two, and Russia's number three. And Russia is, Brazil. Is totally out of control. But Brazil actually is going to catch the U.S. That's how bad it is in Brazil. Brazil is almost up to 1 million cases now. They're doing 30,000 a day. They're heading towards 40,000 a day. And we're just doing a mere 20, although we've been peaked at 20,000 for a couple of months now. But they are going to gain on us and are likely to pass us in August or so, because they're reporting twice as many cases. And that's not even the real count there, because they aren't testing. I mean, Brazil is doing very, very little testing. And in spite of a lack of tests, they still have, they're still number two. In cases, they've got 928,000 cases, and they're number two in deaths. They're up to 45,000 deaths. They just passed the UK, which has got 42,000. Uh-huh. We still have a healthy lead. We got both of them combined are are below 100,000. We're at 119. We're projected to be up to 200,000 by October 1st. And I think that's a low projection, because I think that right now the deaths are on the low side because there's a delay. And they're really just reflecting the declining of cases in the big cities that had them previously. And as a result, most of the people that were going to die have died there, and so they aren't adding that many deaths. So we're a little under 1,000 a day, but we were at 2,000, and in a couple of weeks, we'll be heading back to 2,000 because the cases that are going into the South, and it's more than just the ones that set records today. Alabama, as I mentioned, has got some serious issues, and Georgia, I think, are going up. But anyway, just to give you an idea for the cases, we got up to 24,000 today, and that's in spite of the fact that these other cities. I mean, New York had 631 today, but New Jersey only had 323. Massachusetts uh-huh. only had 195. Pennsylvania had just 362, and Michigan only had 184, and Connecticut only had 114. So those states used to do 500 to 3,000 cases per day, and now they're in the neighborhood of 500 or below. Most of them are 300 or below. And in spite of them not really contributing that much to the cases, it's really been picked up by, California is doing over 3,000 every day now. Florida is now getting close to 3,000. Texas is getting close to 3,000, 2,500. And Arizona
Henry has
is at 2,500.
Has the case fatality rate changed much in the last couple of months? How do you see it now?
No, the case fatality rate is highest with the Italian strain. So the Italian strain is, shifting gears. It kind of ran its course in the Northeast. And so it was what drove the fatalities in New York and New Jersey and Massachusetts and Pennsylvania and Illinois and Louisiana and Connecticut. And now, I just read the list. Those have already peaked. On deaths, New York only had 25 deaths today, and they had 25 deaths yesterday, and they had 23 the day before. So most of these cases in the South have more than 25 deaths. I mean, Maryland had 35 deaths. North Carolina had 35 deaths. Mississippi had 20 deaths, so they were close. Louisiana, I already gave you that. That was 24, but that was from New Orleans. So 25 deaths is pretty low, and that's why the total is below 1,000. But the fatality rate is pretty steady because most of the deaths are associated with these larger outbreaks that involve the Italian strain. And so these Texas and Florida and Arizona are going to, and even California, are going to start having significant numbers of deaths. And the number of deaths is going to go back to over 2,000 a day rate again, and that's why it's going to get up to 200,000. I mean, it's already up to 120,000. It needs another 80,000. It can do that in 40 days if it's doing 2,000 a day. And
almost sounds like a telethon, Henry.
well, that's what Trump's policies are producing it, and that's the real data. I mean, that's That's really what happened, is happening. These people are dying, and more are going to die because there's more going in the hospital. And, that, you know, along those lines, they do have dexamethasone, and, that did show, benefit for those who were already on ventilator. So that, that kind of blows, Trump's argument. I mean, Trump was complaining the other day about his hydroxychloroquine. You know, he thought this study in France was good and some other study was good. And the studies that he thought were good are just, you know, they're not really, I mean, they put them together as a publication, but they're really anecdotal. They don't really have good controls. They're not double blind and they're small in number. And they aren't necessarily just focusing on the sickest cases, but that's what they tell Trump. They say, oh, it didn't work because they're taking people that are near death. He says, oh, yeah, they're taking people that are going to die. Well, they took people that were going to die with dexamethasone, and, you know, about a third of them didn't die in relative to the controls. So the dexamethasone did show promise. The paper hasn't come out yet. You know, they just kind of made an announcement on it. And it sounds like it's fairly limited. It works essentially for those that are already on ventilators to get them off the ventilator because it kind of acts as an anti-inflammatory and gets the inflammation a little bit more under control and stops the damage from, you know, the cytokine storm type of a thing. And so that's... That apparently works. It probably works on a limited number of cases, and because steroids have been used in the past, and they didn't have positive results. Actually, they were shown to be detrimental. So I think it's very tight as far as who the target population is that shows a benefit for. But they kind of hailed that as a big plus, and. The other paper that came out more on the science front was one that, addressed, the Italian strain. And, the Italian strain has this, change in the spike protein. It changes the D at position 614 to a G. And, this is a study actually done with strips. I was at strips out in California. They subsequently got a new facility in Florida. So this is a Florida facility, Scripps Research, they call it. It's in Jupiter, Florida. And they basically did a couple in vitro studies. So these are studies in the lab in a test tube or with cell lines or with different constructs. And their data indicated that a lot of the spike protein is not that useful for getting the virus into the cell, but this particular mutation makes it a little bit more flexible, and so it's easier to be cleaved by the furin at the polybasic cleavage site, and therefore it's more effective at getting into cells, and it's like about five times as many effective spike proteins. And so it shows a dramatic effect in the test tube. And one of the issues, which I thought was really more of a straw man, it really wasn't an issue. You know, they said, well, the reason the number of sequences that have this mutation is so high is that this particular clade had kind of a founder effect. It was there initially and it spread out, and that's a theoretical argument. That's not based on any real data. I mean, the argument is just stupid because when things took off in Italy, there were actually two different clades that were there. And So it didn't really have a head start in Italy. And then when it spread to Europe, there was also another plague that spread at the same time. And it was more in Iran and the Middle East, but it was kind of in the vicinity. And so that was there to compete with it. And then there are examples in the U.S. where it came into an area that had other clades already established, and it overtook them. It did that in Connecticut, and it was even more dramatic in Seattle. Seattle really had the one with the ORF8 mutation. That was dominant in Seattle, and that's all they were finding initially. And then the Italian strain came along, and it started going into that area. And now the majority of the new cases are the Italian strain. So it went into an area where it was already established, and it outcompeted them. So the idea that there was a founder effect, that it went into an area where there was no virus, and it just spread there, and that's why it's dominant there, is just nonsense, because there are examples where it came into an area that already had another clade established, and it ended up taking over that. And then if you look at the total number of sequences, they had mentioned sequences at GeneBank, and there aren't that many sequences at GeneBank, but they have the sequences at GSAD now broken down, so you don't have to do them individually. They actually list them now in the characterization sheet. And the total cases, which aren't just the more recent cases, but overall, counting cases that were done back in February and March before the Italian clade was really expanding dramatically. If you take all of the sequences in GSAD, three quarters of them are the Italian strain now. So they've taken over, and these other areas where new sequences are released, like Arizona, they're virtually 100% the Italian strain, and it's starting to take hold down in Texas, and it's starting to take hold down in Florida, and it was the strain that was dominant in New Orleans, where Louisiana had their big outbreak. So it seems that is part of the mechanism for it to become more dominant, is the ability of the mutation allows the processing to be more effective, and the virus can more easily get into cells. And it's got about five times the number of active spike proteins on the surface as right. It does for the wild type. So it seems that it's made that adaption. And that's why Beijing, which didn't have any cases for 52 days or something, all of a sudden they have over 100 cases that are tied to a wet market
the Chinese are really famine. Taking this seriously. They are really
part of the reason they're taking it seriously is they've sequenced it, and it's the Italian strain. And they didn't have to deal with the Italian strain in their outbreak. They had the original strain, and they know that the Italian strain is more difficult to handle. And anybody that looks at the numbers of the cases that are in the worldwide totals, they can see that the top three are the U.S., Brazil, and Russia, and they're by a long shot. I mean, Russia's got over 500,000 cases. Brazil's almost up to 1 million, and the U.S. is over 2 million. And then India's starting to move up, so they're up to 350 million. And then U.K. leads Europe, and Europe was the one that was dominating because they had the Italian strain. And U.K.'s really only got 300,000. So, Russia, Brazil, and the U.S. all have the Italian strain, and they've got, a mismanaged pandemic And Brazil's probably worse than the U.S. That's why Brazil's, you know, heading towards 40,000 cases per day. And they're going to, yeah, they're going to hit a million cases in a couple of days. And we're at 2 million, but we're only doing 20,000 a day. They're going to be doing 40,000 a day in the just in the future. So they'll make up the ground fairly quickly, and it'll be badly. The U.S. versus Brazil is who's got the most cases and the most deaths, but they'll both have a very big number. And they'll both be well ahead of whoever's in third right now is Russia. And I don't know how bad it's going to get in India. It's possible that with their population, that I haven't really looked at what's circulating in India. I have to take a look at it. When I looked initially, which a little while ago, it was a mixture. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's the Italian strain that's taken over now, because India's kind of, you know, they're close enough to Europe or Russia to bring in the Italian strain. And my guess is that their numbers are starting to go up dramatically. That's essentially what it's due to. And so.
All right, well, let me go. Before you jump away from this, let's go back a little bit before the Italian strain became dominant. When that mutation occurred, why would we think that that's the end of the mutating? Are you thinking that this may mutate, as viruses do, into a nastier form? Is that a possibility?
Yeah. Actually, the Italian strain's already split into three different types now. So there's it's called G, G8, and GR. So
okay.
The H and the R are two additional mutations that it has. So it's already, you know, been divided up with those additional mutations. But the way things usually go with the virus is it's not with the virus. It's just evolution in general. When there's a selection pressure, then it'll mutate to take advantage of that. So if there's enough people that have immunity to the virus, and the old virus isn't that effective at infecting new people, then there'll be variants out there, and the variants invariably will be able to infect the people that have immunity to the original strain, and that takes off. And that's typically what happens in the fall. The first wave is just kind of getting established. And then the second wave ends up being something that is more efficient at infecting. And like I said, all the virus really has to do to be more deadly is to grow faster. There's a higher viral dose and the virus grows quickly once you are infected.
Right. Right.
Then it's harder for the body to win that battle, and you tend to get sicker. And some people that get sicker and have, you know, comorbidities end up dying. And other people end up with these cytokine storms, and they end up with issues that has to do with the damage that the immune system does. Successfully eliminate the virus, but they can have neurological problems. They can have, you know, attacks to their heart, and other issues that lead to death or lead to permanent injuries. So it's the virus has just started mutating. I mean, this is a single amino acid change in the spike protein, but it that's enough for this virus to basically take over the world. And so that's going to be the virus of, that emerges from the first wave. But that's probably not the end of the mutation. So the viruses continue to mutate. And this one was just very easy to call. I mean, the reason it was easy to call is first there were reports coming out of Italy that said that, you know, they had a lot of people that were very sick and dying, and they were filling up the ICU. Mm-hmm. And then there were all these other countries that had not reported any cases. And their first case was some tourist that had traveled to Italy, and they had come back with the virus, and, you know, they were severely ill. And it wasn't these cases that were, you know, asymptomatic, and they, you know, found out they were transmitting because they were testing a bunch of contacts, and they were positive, but they were asymptomatic. These were severely ill individuals or contacts who were severely ill. And it made it real easy to identify there's something going on here. This looks like a COVID case. And so the first indication happened in February. I mean, I remember I was looking at the data on the 17th anniversary of the Metropole Hotel. It was February 21st, and all of these countries in Europe were reporting their first cases, and their first cases were linked to Italy. So. And then it spread out of Europe. It was showing up in Africa. It was showing up in South America. It was showing up everywhere in North America except for the United States. And it was clear that, you know, that something had happened in Italy, and that had led to all of these exported cases. And it was being exported all over the place, or at least, you know, to the West. It was in Africa, South America, North America, not necessarily so much for China. And the U.S. didn't have any cases because they weren't testing for them. They were limiting their testing to people from China. So anybody that came from Europe and had flu-like symptoms, they said, oh, you got flu or you got some other, you know, upper respiratory something or other, but we're not going to test you from COVID. We're focused on initially Wuhan and then China. So that was the first indication, is that it was spreading out of Italy. And then the second indication was that it just took off in New York. And it was, you know, went very, very quickly. And then it spread to New Jersey. And then it was down in eastern Pennsylvania. And then it was up in the Boston area. And then it was down in Louisiana and New Orleans, and then it showed up in Michigan around Detroit, and then it showed up in Illinois and Chicago. And all of those ended up involving the Italian strain. So the Italian strain, you know, got its foothold in the Northeast and then spread to these other major countries, cities, all of which would have international, you know, significant international travel. And they were bringing the virus in either from the East Coast or from Europe. And those all took off. So that was the second indication, was not only was it creating problems in Europe, but now it was starting to create problems in the U.S. And then when the sequences started coming out, it was clear that these were all associated with the Italian strain. And then after that, those kind of came and, you know, started to decline. They had severe lockdowns in all of those cities, all those big cities, because they had significant disease. And then it started spreading out to the Midwest and to the West. I remember seeing it in Phoenix, and I saw it everything in Idaho was the Italian strain. That most of the samples in Alaska were the Italian strains. Now these areas aren't that densely populated, and they didn't have that many cases, but the virus had gone there and become dominant. And so that was the other indication, is that it wasn't limited to the East Coast, and it wasn't limited to these larger cities that had these initial outbreaks. Now it was spreading to the rural areas, and then it started showing up in the South. And now the numbers have gotten to a critical mass in the South, especially for the bigger cities. And now there's you know, all these cases that are showing up in Florida and Texas and Arizona. All are setting records now. And it's not like it's plateauing. They're going straight up. You know, it's like a hockey stick, and they're taking off. And it's probably going to be worse because they've ended the lockdown, and they're saying, you know, we don't need a lockdown. We can handle this. I mean, in Texas, they're saying, oh, we still got beds. You know, don't worry about it. There's still beds available. You know, they probably won't be full till next week or so, but don't worry about it. We got beds, and we've got an economy. We can keep everything going. Keep doing what you're doing. We got room for you at the hospital. Don't worry about it.
Room, you know, at the end.
If you die, we'll have more room at the hospital. So it's going to be a disaster. And then Trump's going to come along.
I'm just kicking back listening, but what keeps floating through my mind is that this is really a potentially politically historic event. These four. This is a big deal. This is potentially a catastrophe.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's not potentially. It's likely a catastrophe. I mean, you can't bring that many people in to a hot zone like this and say, come on down. And here's a mask. You know, you can put this mask on, and, you know, they'll take it home as a souvenir and take a picture of it. It'll probably take Trump all over it. But, you know, and that's all they're going to do, is it's going to be something to hang on the wall. It's not going to help them get rid of the virus or prevent the virus or prevent them from spreading the virus, which is what the mask is really primarily designed to cause, this N95 mask. So these cloth masks are just to prevent it from going from the person wearing the mask. And it's going to be a disaster because it's got all of the ingredients. The things you're supposed to avoid is being inside, mm-hmm. not having a mask, and being crowded, being in the same place for an extended period of time, and shouting. I mean, it's like, these are what you're not supposed to do. Check, 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 check. Oh, let's do all that and see what happens. And it's not that hard to figure out what's going to happen. And, you know, the only issue is going to be is how long is it going to take to be reported? Because it's going to be incubation periods. And are these people going to go to the doctors? And are the doctors going to test mm-hmm. them? And are they mm-hmm. going to report the data? And are the states going to quickly report the results they have? So that's what the only there's not a question that it's going to be a disaster for the attendees. The question is, when is the rest of the world going to find out how bad it is? And I mean, there's no reason for it not to be bad, especially, I mean, Tulsa, Oklahoma's at a somewhat lower level, but, you know, Florida, Texas, and Arizona are all taking off, and they're taking off now. They'll be much worse in 10 days, when he's probably going to start his, you know, post-Tulsa round of rallies. And it's hard to imagine why it won't be a disaster. The only way it won't be a disaster is word will leak out from the first one that, you mm-hmm. know, as so-and-so, you know, I don't know, they might all, you know, enough of them might be vocal enough to say, well, I went to the rally and I don't know, I kind of got this clock. You know, and if word gets out that, you know, a lot of people that have went there are symptomatic, then that may limit the number that show up for the next one. But it's not clear. I mean, these people are in denial. They're saying now with 120 million, 120,000 dead, and 2 million infected, and being number one in the world, they're saying, well, is this pandemic for real? Is this a real thing, or is this just, you know, hyping by the Democrats? And they're literally asking that with people die with their beds full in Montgomery, Alabama, and they're voting not to require masks when they're out of hospital, they're out of ICU beds, and they're not just in the hospital now, they're dying, and the dying is going to continue, and
all right.
And they're just saying, "What me worry?"
Right.
They're taking Alfred E. Newman's position.
Me worry?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all right. Well, we've got apparently
the
second venue there in Tulsa for the overflow crowd, right? So we'll watch that.
That's
we'll
what
keep
I hear.
Reporting
there's
on this.
Supposed
yeah.
to be, there's supposed to be 60,000 or something in the adjacent convention center.
Oh,
rumor has it. Now, he may try to get out of it at the last minute and say, well,
anything's
we've got
possible.
This one's full, that one's full, and so we'll do it outside. But he's really running out of time to
all
do
right.
that. And,
yeah,
and one other thing.
Real quick.
the center where he's talking has been closed for a couple of months. They're not really scheduled to open until the beginning of next year because of COVID. And so they've got to bring all their employees back and get them to gear up and open the place up. And guess what? Most of these employees are elderly. So the employees are going to get infected too. Okay.
Another fun angle.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, yeah. Henry. All right. Good night.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Back with you tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here, and we will talk soon.